Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. And we are on December 15th, 2011, almost the end of the year. Where did this year go? Something amazing is going on right now. And I've been trying to get an update the last just seconds before the show. Let me start at the beginning. About a day ago, a comet was discovered in the solar system heading for the sun. And it was discovered through amateur equipment. An amateur astronomer in Australia discovered this. And then it was determined that the comet would be heading a beeline towards the sun. This is coming from the south. And I've talked years and years about these comets. The standard scientific community claims that it is due to a comet that dissolved back in the 1800s, which is like many stories in standard science. This story or this tale, this fairy tale science, has been around since the 1800s. But at any rate, right now, a real comet, and it's very big. It's the biggest comet to come in this close to the sun. And I understand from one picture that I saw that it has already come very close to the sun. I don't know if it's going to exactly hit the sun, but the video part of the NASA feeds have been pulled. So I don't have the feeds of the satellites that are watching the sun, the SOHO satellite especially, which has two very good views, a narrow angle view and then the C3 wide angle view. They've been pulled, and there's no information available. I imagine they do this right before my show to prevent me from talking about the results. However, over the past day, as this comet approached the sun went into some very strange maneuvers. It started pulsing with, I wouldn't call them CMEs, I would just call them surface flaring. But very quickly, on the scale of about every 30 minutes, and that's very fast for activity on the sun when looping celestial or solar flaring can sometimes last up to days. So this pulsing activity was lasting on the normal norm of about 30 minutes, and whoosh, 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 pulsing out the sides of the sun, very unusual solar activity. But I still haven't seen the end result of this comet coming very close to the sun. It's very large, and of course NASA is trying to put out the spin that yes, this is one of those little icy wanderers. An absolutely absurd story. Ice in space that close to the sun wouldn't last 10 seconds, let alone days or a couple days coming in like this. But at any rate, I'll try and keep people posted on my webpage. And along this same topic, I just want to remind you that this same type of event happened September 29th, I believe, was the date. And I happened to be on a show called Coast to Coast AM that night, reviewing the news and solar conditions. And I said, by the way, this comet has just appeared on the SOHO screens, and we're going to see what happens. And that weekend was a very interesting weekend as NASA pulled the feeds. And you can go back and listen to all of that detail on my shows around that time, and then postings on my page around that time, September 29th to October 3rd, and then the next week's show, that would have been the 4th, 5th, 6th of October show, where I went into detail on all of the activity that happened that weekend, how NASA pulled the feed, then how Monday they finally had to release it. And they had all of their apologists in a row saying how that was just coincidence, all those gigantic solar flares when this comet came in. Well, it didn't surprise me when NASA pulled the feeds shortly before my show started. As I said, I could see that the comet has already hit the sun in a still photo, but there was no video footage of either the C3 or the C2 cameras on Soho to tell me what really happened. And we'll see how long they hold those feeds before releasing them, or maybe there's a little Photoshop activity going on. And by the way, along the same lines, of course, when things like this happen, many fans will write in and tell me about what's going on. One such email came, and I want to just quote this because it's very interesting. It says, comet from the south plunging towards the sun, and this is a forwarded email. And then the comment of this listener said, is this another con like Comet Elenin? Remember the Comet Elenin hoax and all of that going on. Well, the original email that came out was from a clown named Sheldon, and I hope most of you, if you get emails from this person, send them back. And so early in this comet's visitation into the solar system, then this guy goes, well, that's why it's raining in Tucson. And here's the problem. You've got some real non-scientist people running around, jumping up and down, trying to get attention. They're very attention-needy people, and this is very common on the Internet. But basically, they think they're informing people, but the end result is, as this listener, you know, forwarded this to me, his take on it was, this is a con. This is a misinformation. It's like Comet Elenin. And that was a very good observation, except for the fact that, in this case, the comet is real. And that's what happens with these wannabes that are out there jumping up and down on the Internet. They're not helping. They're thinking, oh, I'm in the spotlight. I'm really helping people. And they're not. They're idiots. They don't know what they're doing. And people perceive them as that. So the real end result is negative. It destroys the image. And then they're trying to look, and I'll quote from this email, the original email, and it says, and as usual, more comets coming in from the south, directly from Planet X. So you can see that, you know, people are like this are trying to copy my work, but they're spinning it and twisting it in weird ways, and the end result really is that people turn it off as quackery. And that's what it is. People, these Johnny-come-lately wannabes think that they're going to do something important, and the end result is they're destroying a topic that I've spent decades developing. So at any rate, I'll try and keep you posted. Hopefully I can pull up on one of the computers here in the studio, the NASA feed, and see if that comet, the video from that comet has been released before the end of the show. Just a quick story in the news this past week. NASA has lost about 500 moon rocks, and they don't know where they went, who has them, or if they were stolen, whatever. And then they claim they have about 26,000 moon rocks, but I've made the point many times before that these rocks allegedly were gathered from the surface of the moon. And remember, Russia had moon rocks, and they never went to the moon. They got them by a remote lander, and they were able to bring that back to Earth with moon rocks. But be that as it may, the point is that anything on the surface of the moon has nothing to do with the structure of the moon. On Earth, we are seeing a constant influx. In fact, there's a number of tons measurement of how much material actually falls into Earth every day, and it's a lot. It's a lot of material coming in the form of pebble size or rock size or fist size meteorites that come into the Earth's atmosphere. So the moon is getting the same thing. So over the long-term life of the moon with no atmosphere, there's no atmosphere to burn these objects up as they come in. So they come in and they land on the surface of the moon. And that's what the moon rocks are, if they are real moon rocks at all. But presuming that they somehow got some moon rocks and brought them back here, by whatever standard you measure that, they have nothing to do with the moon at all. They simply are rocks that have fallen into the moon over the eons, and that's what's on the surface of the moon. I just want a quick comment. Over this past week, once again, the Jupiter winds continue 165 mile per hour hurricane force winds in the northern UK. They basically shut down England and the British Isles and the North Sea, any countries bordering the North Sea. There was a great picture that was in one of the articles. It had a three-blade wind generator system, which now are dotting the English horizon. In landscape, I talked about this on a number of previous shows, how they're now realizing the boondoggle in these three-blade wind generator systems. Not that wind is a bad source of energy, it's just been the industries have been using this boondoggle NASA design with three blades, and it just doesn't work. But in this case, with high winds, it shows the wind generator in a ball of flames with part of it crashing to the ground, and you have these long couple hundred foot arms sticking out there in 165 mile an hour wind. What do you think's going to happen? So at any rate, that's a great picture. Maybe I'll be able to post that on my webpage here. But the main story, once again, the Jupiter winds continuing, and around the globe there have been other high wind, straight line wind situations. In Latin America, Venezuela, Colombia, and the Caribbean have been under weeks of inundation, just flooding and tremendous amount of damage, people being displaced from their homes, many people killed, roads washed out. And these are in poor countries where there's really no method for fast repair or repairing the roads, etc. So the damage that is done to these people, I read one story where displaced farmers from regions of Colombia were squatting on some land in the northwest part of the country, and the military came in and moved them out. I mean, these people have no place to go. They have nothing, literally nothing. But the world is becoming, this is the world that we're living in, where people are simply being displaced, no place to go, and going wherever they can to just try and survive. As I said, Venezuela and some of the Caribbean islands, just tremendous flooding in past weeks. And these are weather systems that are originating in Latin America and moving northeast in a northeasterly direction with no end in sight. They've had unbelievable flooding in some of those regions over the past year. So at any rate, on to the next topic. I have talked many times about the phone. I will start calling it the phone mafia. The telephone mafia, the cell phone companies, and the other, mainly most companies are concentrating on cell phone activity. Landlines are a thing of the past. Very few people still use landlines, and there's all kinds of options like Skype, and there's a thing called Magic Jack. There's many ways of getting a phone call with just using internet calling. And so the point is, however, the cell phone companies are holding the public hostage. And as I talk about this, what I've realized in talking to people, friends and friends of friends, etc., I'm realizing that people just don't understand the concept here. Why is the cell phone company ripping you off? And so I decided to give a couple examples here. And so let me just summarize what the plans are like for the cell phone companies. First of all, you have voice and data and text. They claim the way they sell this, it's separate. Like you can buy a plan where you get voice and data and so many minutes of voice and a certain amount of data, etc. But you're paying for these as if they're three separate entities. And the reality is that they're all one. Once they get into the network, and especially when you get to 4G phones and things like this, it's all data. Your voice is data. Your text is data. Your internet is data. And once it goes out of your phone, there's really not a big difference. And so I want to give you a couple examples. Let's take an example. Imagine at your house. Now, all of you have an electric meter on your house if you have an outside electric service. And you have basically bulk electricity coming into your house. And every house is configured differently. There are probably no two houses exactly alike. And so you have lights, you have a breaker box, and that splits the electric out into somewhat neat patterns in your house. The lights in the kitchen, the bedroom lights, maybe you have a refrigerator or some appliance like a washing machine on a separate breaker, or an air conditioner might run on 220 volts. So you have this distribution of electricity in your house. But what if the electric company came out and said, okay, you have an air conditioner, so that's one appliance, and you have this many lights, you have the bedroom light, you have the kitchen light, you have the living room light, you have a light over your son's desk in the bedroom. Okay, now you have a toaster, and you have a blender, and every device they list separately. And so when your blender goes on, they go, oh, you have a blender going, and so we're going to charge you a certain rate, the blender rate for electricity. And then you're going to have the toaster rate. Okay, now your laundry is working, so we're going to charge you laundry electricity rate. And so this is what the phone companies are doing with cell phones. And in reality, the electricity that comes into your house is just, you know, it really doesn't matter where it goes to. But please understand, this is the concept of the smart grid. It's to charge you for every little piece of electricity that you use and separate it out. And this is what's going on with the cell phone companies. They're saying, oh, you have voice and data and text. And in reality, it's like the electric company. And when it goes out, it's all a digital stream. So then you add services. Okay, long distance. When you get to the services, the way they're put together today, there should be no such thing as long distance. There should be no such thing as international calling. They're charging an arm and a leg. So what's going on? Companies like Skype are coming out, and you can call any place in the world, or you can be any place in the world and make your calls over the internet, because it's just data. A lot of the cell phone companies block or try to block people from using Skype on their networks. They're trying to fight this hammer and tong. And I might add right now, I'm doing this program through a digital communications medium. It's not coming on any kind of regular phone line. And so basically all you need as a human being in this world, whether it's for entertainment, television, video, pictures, cinema, for telephone, for internet data, for your computer, for your cell phone, all you need is a fairly decent internet connection, maybe about a T1 speed, 1.5 megabit. But a lot of people have 4, 10, 20 megabit service at their house, or through now available in some places through Wi-Fi. And so basically, there are services that are just coming out. I saw one, not to advertise names, but I believe it was Rogers Mobile that came out with a $19 a month plan and its cell phone, which is mainly Wi-Fi compatible. And so all of your calling, the idea is that all of your calling and usage would be through a Wi-Fi hotspot. So at any rate, and these are available more and more. Some people have them in their houses, so you could go around your house. I know one guy that has his entire house set up with Wi-Fi and uses Skype, doesn't pay a phone bill. His total phone bill per year is about $60, something like that. So at any rate, let me give you another example. Say that the water company comes into your house and they say, you got a sink in the kitchen, you got a sink in the bathroom, you got a sink in the bathroom downstairs, you got two showers, and then you got your laundry. Okay, you got two spigots outside the house. And so every time that you use water from one of these different sources, you get charged an add-on rate. It's like, okay, you have all of these, so when you do laundry, you get charged more because you have that extra service in your house. Well, how ridiculous. If somebody offered that to you, you would say, you got to be out of your mind. But this is what the phone companies are doing to you, the public. So I just want to go down kind of a laundry list of the damaging mess that we have now in the phone industry. We have six major companies and many, many minor companies trying to provide service. There is no single cohesive network in the United States, and none of these work together. They all have different technologies, all different connection technologies. There is a duplication at least of six times the number of cell and cell towers. So imagine a building that's centrally located or high, or a water tower in many cases where they mount the antennas for cellular service. You'll have as many as 6 to 10 companies with their cell service on those. That requires a workman from each company to go up on that tower and service their equipment. You have the redundancy of all the support staff, financial divisions of those companies, CEOs, and profit. So when you're paying your cell company for your bill, and the guy next to you has a different company, you are redundantly paying for someone to go up and service the equipment and do everything necessary to keep this going. And it's just a giant mess because none of these companies want to deal with each other or talk to each other. They all want to push each other out of business, or else, as in the case of some, they want to join as partners and form a bigger, trying to move into that monopoly position in the industry. But some of these companies, when they try and merge, can't do it because the technologies that they chose are totally different. When AT&T, the mother company of telecommunications in the United States, when that was broken up many decades ago, the concept was laid down that these companies had to be interoperable. Interoperable. That means they had to operate together. They had to be friends. They had to work together. And they had to allow second sourcing of their services, complete services. So now you have Sprint, for example, second sources its services to like Virgin or Rogers or Republic, but they only allow them 3G on the data side. They won't sell them the 4G capability, which is against the law. And those are the companies like the Virgin and the Republic and the Boost, for example, that don't have contracts. What's this idea of a 2-year contract? You have to sign up. Then they give you terrible service, and when you try and leave, they're going to charge you $200 per phone to leave their terrible network. And when you go to somebody else, they're just as bad. You would call these companies up, and nobody answers. You're on hold forever. It's just a giant mess in this supposed great country that we have. The most central thing that we all need is simply a single means of communication, and we don't have it. How ridiculous, how absurd. There's no quality control over handsets. These handsets don't work after 3-4 months, and then there's no responsibility for these, and they're throwing them out there faster than you can make popcorn. There's no upgradability in handsets. If one goes bad, you got to throw it away and buy a new one. Or upgrade. In computers, it used to be that you could upgrade. And most people, here's the simple fact that most people do not need all of the capability of some of these phones like Androids and etc. Most people don't use all those capabilities. They just need to talk to someone. Why is it costing them hundreds of dollars per month? And, you know, with contracts, it's just absurd. These companies don't work together. Roaming charges, you go to certain areas, and all I can tell you is it's a mess. The internet phone is the way of the future, and I believe it was Microsoft that recently bought Skype, telling people that this is the way of the future. So the cell phone companies right now are running scared. So what are they doing? They are charging people with ridiculous situations and demanding that people pay these outrageous fees. The internet is full of this. But all you need is a $35 relatively decent internet connection. The phone should have the intelligence. Why should the phone company hold your voicemail? When it comes, it should just go to your phone. And if it's not, if you're out of range, well, sure, you come back, and as soon as you're in range, it should download the phone's your voice messages to you. It's just data, just like it downloads an email to your phone. Your phone should be a center of communication and very portable. You should be able to go any place in this great country of the United States and get a phone signal. And that's interoperable with the other companies. There should be no such thing as roaming. Anyway, I'm going to get off of that bandwagon here and get on to the main topic of the show. Just want to remind you that go to the web page. I now am posting, once again, freeze-dried food. It's become quite available again in quantity and in variety. So look for the web page once again. The Mountain House freeze-dried food will be available on the web page. I'm coming up here at the first part of 2012 with some new, very exciting products in terms of water filtration. And so I'm not going to pre-announce that until it's actually posted on the page. But what we're trying to do is cover a broader spectrum of needs in the water filtration as it's for you, the customer. So keep an eye out for that. As I said, look for that around. We'll actually start posting and selling up to very close to the end of December, but just to keep that in mind. And let's see, what else? Well, the two books are just coming out of reprinting. The Planet X book just came out of reprinting. I think it's got a few more things to be done. But the ninth printing of that book and the Atlantis to Tesla book, we've got enough on the shelf to keep the orders filled, but that is going into its next reprinting. These books have sold over the ages, and they're still as valid today as they were from the first day they were on the market. Tonight's main science topic, this is a story that, let me just go through my notes here. I want to move some of my notes out of the way. Okay, this story this past week shocked me. In these days, not very much shocks me anymore. I've just about seen everything that in the world, I think, in terms of science, in terms of bad science, etc. But this story truly shocked me, and I want to read the source I got was from the Ottawa Citizen. It's a newspaper in Ottawa. And two of the top U.S. hurricane forecasters, William Gray and Phil Klotzbach, quit. They resigned their positions. And now these are guys that were in the news anytime there was a hurricane. Bill Gray, William Gray, was at the top of the, always on TV, making announcements, talking about predictions. These top two people in the National Hurricane Prediction Center in Colorado State Universities resigned their jobs, and I want to read what they said. I'll just read the article. It says, title here, that's the from the Ottawa Citizen. December 13, 2011, hurricane experts admit they can't predict hurricanes early. December forecast too unreliable. So basically they're saying they don't know how to predict hurricanes. And then it goes on to say, two top U.S. hurricane forecasters famous across the Deep South hurricane country are quitting the practice of making a seasonal forecast in December because it doesn't work. Because it doesn't work. This is the quote of these two men. William Gray and Phil Klotzbach say they look back, say a look back shows their past 20 years of forecasts had no predictive value. I want to read this again. This is earth-shattering. William Gray and Phil Klotzbach say a look back shows their past 20 years of forecasts had no predictive value. Now, I want to bring you back a few years here. First of all, a big chunk of their staff quit a number of years ago. It got some press, but then it was quickly kind of pressed out of the news media. A part of their staff quit, saying, look, this is not working. What we're doing is not correct. I have been pounding on this wall, this immobile wall, for a very long time. I would say well over a decade, if not longer. And stating that these people don't have factors that have any meaning at all. They have supercomputers, and they predict the paths of hurricanes in the future, the predictive value of hurricanes, based on a laundry list of factors, none of which have anything to do with hurricane formation. And then the problem is they predict hurricane paths. I forget which hurricane it was that came in, and the people in the Tampa-St. Petersburg area, they were told this hurricane was going to go north. So nobody prepared. They were doing business as usual, and that hurricane made a turn, about a 60-degree turn, and came in and rolled over that area and just leveled everybody. I knew people that were there. And they were just, one guy was mowing his lawn. He didn't think a hurricane was coming. The damage that has been wrought by bad predictions from these people is just staggering. Another one is I quoted in my book, and this was back in the 90s, a hurricane called Hurricane Floyd was coming in off the Atlantic and heading for South Florida. And I woke up one morning, and I looked, and it said that the Dade County School Board decided to leave all the kids in school that day. So here you have a Category 5 hurricane heading to Florida, 500 miles off the coast, and all the kids are in school. And this is based on a prediction that hurricane was going to turn and head north. And I just couldn't believe it. And that the head of the prediction was the name William Gray. And so I said, this is insane. And the South Florida, the mayor of South Florida, the Dade County area, said, oh, no, we're afraid that it might affect tourism and business. So they didn't do anything. And by the grace of God, that hurricane did turn north and headed up the coastline. But there was no way that the predictive elements in their prediction had any value. But if that hurricane came in, now I want to remind you that Hurricane Floyd was followed by three other hurricanes close in its path, something that's not supposed to happen according to standard hurricane theory. And so the point was, if Hurricane Floyd decided to make a left turn at the last minute and came into southern Florida, you had people absolutely, totally unprepared with no escape route. They wouldn't be able to get north, and you know that Florida has no orderly escape route in planning, which is absolutely ridiculous, absurd beyond all measure. That the way they should have it is, okay, the northern cities have to start moving out and up into Georgia to leave those freeways open for the people coming up the highway from the south. It has to be kind of like you board an airplane. There's an order to it. There's an order to the people coming in and sitting down, and then the next wave of people can come in and sit down. You don't all try and go in at the same time. So at any rate, if Floyd had turned west and gone over Florida, it would have killed hundreds of thousands of people. And then you had the second wave of hurricane. If those came in, it would have totaled the place off. It would have killed South Florida based on predictions of bad predictions by these people. And I was just incensed. In fact, the story, I forget which book it's in. It's probably in the weather book or possibly the Atlantis to Tesla book. But there's a phrase I developed back in the 90s, kind of the mid-90s, when I was criticizing the same set of analysis and hurricane prediction. And I said, you cannot predict the weather if you don't know what causes the weather, which is true. And the situation is the same for weather prediction, no matter where it is. We see all the time where the weather service has absolutely no clue about what's going on. And so they, but here's the problem. Hurricanes and violent storms are powered from outside the solar system. There are solar conditions and solar wind conditions that drive our, that work through our protective magnetic field, the sheath that surrounds Earth, and to come down and drive these storm systems. They are not driven by warm water. A concept that is so far beyond absurd that I just am amazed that scientists and PhDs can stand in a row and think that somehow warm water from the ocean drives these hurricanes. We see hurricanes on Mars. And Mars has no oceans. We see hurricanes over land. There are no warm oceans. We see hurricanes in North Atlantic, in frigid, icy water. There's no explanation for these hurricanes based on warm water. Something else is driving them. And so that's what my weather work is about, showing that these are driven by electrical currents coming down from the ionosphere, which are in turn driven by solar conditions from outside. So at any rate, but I want to turn and say something. In standard science, for scientists to stand up and say, our work for the past 20 years has no value, and resign their position, all I can say is something happened. I don't know what. I don't know if it's something that I had to do with, because I have just absolutely been pounding on this for, like I say, a very, very long time, well over, you know, a decade into two decades. And, of course, back in the 80s, I was saying the same thing when I was showing that weather was driven by electrical conditions. But the for these two scientists to simply resign their position and walk away and make a public statement that their 20 years of work had no value is unheard of. And so I want to commend them because they did this. The mistakes of the past cannot be changed. But for them to actually come out and say this gives me a ray of hope. I cannot imagine, for example, NASA coming out and saying, you know, comets are not dirty snowballs. It's not going to happen because NASA is a very controlled entity. Scientists in NASA couldn't do this because all the scientists in NASA are under gag orders. They signed gag orders a number of years old, years ago, probably about a decade ago when Dan Golden came in and shut the lid on the science at NASA. That was one of his jobs, to make sure that scientists couldn't come out and publicly speak their mind. I got a kick out of a couple scientists that were working in global warming. And they wrote up some reviews, and at the time what they wrote was politically incorrect. And so their reviews, their scientific papers, were modified by politicians and by people in charge of their funding. And these scientists came out and said, wait a minute, we're scientists. We get to say what we want. And they came back and said, no, you don't get to say what you want. You're owned. You get to say what we tell you to say. And if you say what we don't like what you're saying, we're going to shut you off and you're not going to get funding. This is the way it works. So for these two scientists to come out and say this in public and say that basically I want to read this again. They said, a look back shows their past 20 years of forecasts had no predictive value. And now I want to mention something. Every year I give my personal hurricane prediction for the year, but I do something very different. These scientists were predicting based on past weather conditions. They would try and extrapolate using El Nino, La Nina, and many of these other factors, and say, well, this is what we think the hurricane prediction would be for the number of hurricanes, named storms, etc., over the season. They didn't give dates, or they didn't give any time frame for in which these would happen. Then along around September, they would revise their prediction, and they would make one more course correction around October in their prediction. And every year, gee, doggone, they just seemed to come out just right every year and got that future funding for the next year. Well, it's just, this is not science. This is just ridiculous. So at any rate, my predictions were based on solar conditions, electrical alignments, and many times I predicted hurricane activity. In fact, Hurricane Floyd, I predicted 6 months in advance on the exact date when it happened. And I remember that story quite well because the May of that year, there was a Comet Lee that was coming into the solar system, and it had some very curious electrical alignments along with many other electrical alignments, including a new moon passing. And I think it was on about the 6th of September when I made, when I picked the date. I said that on the 6th of September, we're going to see amazing hurricane activity in the Atlantic. And so up to that time, the naysayers and my the NASA apologists who follow me around and try and ridicule me were laughing on the internet, and there was just crazed laughing. Nothing's going on. And coming up to about the day before, the peak of the laughing and et cetera was going on, saying how ridiculous it was. And around midnight that night, the night before, it's like the sky fell. The Atlantic and around the Pacific, we had something like 60 hurricane-type storms develop around the world, around the equatorial region of the world that night, and five major hurricanes in the Atlantic. Well, the silence from the critics was almost deafening. And it just proved, which was, it was good. I'm glad they got out and had a good laugh over it before it happened, because all they did was bring more attention to what I was doing. And when it happened, everybody sat back and they said, wow, this guy can predict hurricanes 6 months in advance, but it's based on real science, the real cause of hurricanes. And so all of these years, I've been in the background fighting this system of government-supported science, of the people trying to predict hurricanes, and they had their list of factors. Not a single one of them had anything to do with hurricane development. So anyway, I'm going to read the rest of this article. By the way, I want to make sure you know that this came from the Ottawa Citizen, December 13, 2011. I'm going to continue reading. It says, the two scientists from Colorado State University will still discuss different probabilities of hurricane seasons in December, but the shift signals how far humans are, even with supercomputers, from truly knowing what our weather will do in the long run. Colorado State has been known for decades for forecasts of how many named storms and hurricanes can be expected each official hurricane season, which runs from June to November. Last week, the pair made this announcement. We are discontinuing our early December quantitative hurricane forecast for the next year. Our early December Atlantic Basin seasonal hurricane forecasts of the last 20 years have not shown real-time forecast skill, even though the hindsight studies on which they were based are had considerable skill. Okay, so anyway, but basically what they're saying is that they would take patterns of previous storms and atmospheric conditions, etc., put it into a supercomputer, and that would give them a certain level of predictive analysis. But the only problem is none of the factors like high-level wind, shear, etc., sure, those things have something to do with hurricane development. But those things are all dependent on other factors, the other factors that are, come from outside the planet. And the hurricane season does not depend on El Nino or La Nina or salt content in the water or the laundry list of other factors that these people had in their supercomputers. So, but that this leads up to a very interesting question. This leaves a vacuum in a area that had a square peg in a round hole for 20 years. You had people predicting hurricanes using government funding, and now what's going to happen? There's a giant gap there. There's some private companies that don't have any better information than these people had that are trying to make predictions and make money off of it. Some of them trying to provide money or trying to provide information, say, to insurance companies, to actuarial calculations, to provide information, well, this year there's going to be more hurricanes, therefore charge higher rates or whatever. But the one thing I want to go back to is I remember a number of years ago, the National Hurricane Prediction Center came out and said, we are going to have a bombshell of a hurricane season this year. And so what happened? They stopped shipping oil from across the Caribbean north to the United States. It made a big dent into the oil production, and so oil futures went through the ceiling. People, especially retired people in, on fixed incomes, were very hard hit, and there was no government relief because there was simply no oil available. It was in short supply, and that's because these guys had made a dire prediction of hurricanes for that year. And it turned out there weren't any hurricanes that particular year. It was a pretty much of a dud year. But that didn't stop the futures, the oil futures, and of course that affects prices of everything. There was no recourse for bad science. Bad science, bad predictions, high oil prices, and no recourse to come back and say, look what you did. I'm surprised at how easily these people can slide out of responsibility. And let's take a look at South Florida. St. Petersburg, I believe, was where that hurricane came in a number of years ago. As I said, it made a turn. They predicted it would go farther north. And it came in there and just leveled the place, came into Central Florida, destroyed many, many. Of course, in that area, you have a lot of trailer courts. And it just leveled them. And I remember stories of people trying to get into these areas to see the damage or find loved ones. And they said they were simply gone. Then the government comes out and claims that there was a death toll of, you know, like 212 or some number like that, when it was well known that tens of thousands of people were dead and simply unaccounted for. That's when FEMA was still young, and the word was that there were FEMA refrigerator trucks in those areas loading up the body bags and hauling them away to nobody knows where they were hauled to or what happened to those people. They just simply disappeared off the face of the earth. Then we have another little issue of hurricane control, where hurricanes manipulated storms using satellite lasers through the military, did tremendous damage. Four hurricanes in one event coming into Florida in rapid succession. How about the five hurricanes 2 years ago that came into Cuba that were directing it? It was like bowling balls coming into Cuba. And the first of those I did a special radio show on. A fan emailed, and it was up late, about midnight one night. I thought, well, I'll just look at my email once more. And a fan sent in an email and says, someone who had been following my weather work, and said, I don't know what's going on, but there seems to be a very rapid hurricane development out east of the Eastern Antilles, basically the Virgin Islands. And so I quick popped up and I had been looking at the weather just a short time ago, and there was no trace of anything. And so I thought, well, I'll take a look at it. And so I looked there, and to my amazement, before my very eyes, a Category 2 hurricane was developing out of nowhere in the western Atlantic. These storms typically would start developing over just west of Africa and would take days and days and days to develop, but this storm was just coming out of nowhere. And so I got on the phone and I called to the weather station in the British Virgin Islands, and I said, you've got a hurricane developing east of your island, and it's going to be there in about an hour. And this is pushing midnight, and probably 2 a.m. there. And so the station attendant, who was also monitoring weather, and he said, we get our feeds from the National Weather Service in the United States, and they haven't issued us any warnings. There's nothing available there. And I said, well, I'm sorry to tell you this, but there's a hurricane developing offshore, and you better do something. So, and I said, you can look at it yourself. And so anyway, they started to make announcements. And they got people organized, and people were able to actually go out on the street and start going up and down streets and telling people to prepare. Well, the storm did not fully develop until it hit Puerto Rico. Just after talking to the Virgin Islands radio stations, I called the main radio stations in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I told them the same thing. And they said, well, they replied with the same thing. They talked to their weather person, and they said, we don't have any information from the National Weather Service. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but in about 12 hours, you are going to have a major hurricane rolling over your island, and you better start telling people to prepare. And so I explained to them, and they were actually a little bit more difficult to convince, but they started making announcements. And they started making announcements. By the time the storm hit Puerto Rico, they were prepared. But there was not a single announcement. The first announcement from the National Weather Service didn't come until the storm was halfway across Puerto Rico, moving west. This was just amazing, but what it showed was that this was a developed storm. This was a manipulated storm that was, this storm was not a naturally developing storm. Or how about the storm, I forget what the name of it was, in the Atlantic. It did a loop-de-loop. It came up from the south, came north, went east, went south, came back west, and then swung into Florida. You could see the stretching of the eye of that hurricane where the laser satellite was dragging it around like a bull with a ring in its nose, and then sent it off into Florida. We've seen storms manipulated that come through the strait between Yucatan and Cuba, moving up. In fact, that was the case in Hurricane Katrina. The very interesting thing about Hurricane Katrina was that the people in Europe with oil futures already were starting to short sell and develop short selling and other money-making basically bets through oil futures that a hurricane would hit New Orleans area and devastate the oil region there, the oil producing capability of the New Orleans area, about a day before that hurricane actually came up. And you could see that hurricane come up, go west. When it hit due south of New Orleans, it made a beeline straight north, and as it came across New Orleans, it made a slight right turn to go right over the oil refineries and other oil facilities in the area. And then, of course, a day later is when they blew the levees in New Orleans, claiming that it was a storm surge which had already passed. I remember seeing the videos of downtown on the street cameras in New Orleans the morning after Katrina had passed. And it was drizzling a little bit. The people were walking up and down St. Charles Avenue. The streetcars were running. And then the levees broke. This is a day after Katrina had passed over. And it broke in seven places, strategic places around New Orleans. it's just amazing that there's no scientific investigation of these events. But once again, a very manipulated storm. All of this, the point is, all of this in the epic of the scientists, Gray, Klotzbach, and the crew, making predictive analysis or also cover stories that this is what the hurricanes did, or you know, that this was somehow a natural event, when these were man-made events. Well, there was another hurricane that was coming in shortly thereafter into the Galveston area. And once again, a very manipulated storm. So it was in that era of Katrina when we saw many, many manipulated storms. The most recent rash of manipulated storms were the storms that hit Cuba 2 years ago. They're just like bowling balls. And then the last one came in and from the north, it came in from the west, swung north, and then came down and basically ran along Cuba, along the full length of Cuba. There was a time when they were trying to get Cuba to break and join the Organization of American States. And Castro and the boys down there just said, no, we know what you're doing. And they weathered it out, and Cuba remained financially independent. So and the point is that all of this hurricane and weather manipulation going on when you have a government agency claiming to have predictive power of hurricanes, giving the cover story. And this, once again, I don't know where criminal activity begins and ends, but it's sure touch and go in this case. But I just am amazed that these two scientists would step up to the plate and say, everything we have done for the past 28 years, in their words, had no predictive value. Wow. That is an amazing statement from people like this. And you do not see this in government science. You do not see this. So I don't know what the fallout of this is going to be. It's going to be interesting to watch. I haven't seen any fallout or any follow-up stories in the news after this broke. So I'm starting to run out of time here. I'll be on Coast to Coast AM. When is it going to be? Next Wednesday night, the 21st, December 21st, first hour, discussing some topics. And Lord, what else? I believe I'll be doing a Christmas special, pre-recorded, if all goes well, with James Jancic on Feet to Fire. And I believe that's going to actually air on Christmas Day, the 25th. So at any rate, I'm out of time. We'll talk to you next week. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.